Good afternoon, everyone. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop. It's Thursday, June 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Fresh off a successful fun drive, it's time for the Science Forum on the show, and we welcome back our experts to answer your scientific questions. And our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Perhaps you have a question about the Mpemba effect. Well, we'll talk about that coming up. The number is 800-348-2551. Barbara Bravitz, let it be known, does not want to speak about the Mpemba effect, but that we will do, and it's coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we reconvene the Science Forum, and I have a feeling this is going to be an epic edition of the program. The number is 800-348-2551. There's already acrimony among the scientists. The number is 800-348-2551. I would say email us the questions at voxpopwamc.org. But in fairness, our producer's not here right now, and I forgot to bring in the device to read the emails. So you can email the questions. They won't be answered, but go right ahead. Otherwise, give us a call, 800-348-2551. And with that, let's have our panel of scientists sign in, please.
Ed Stander, and I hate everyone. I'm from SUNY Cobleskill. I teach geology, astronomy, and environmental science.
Now, do you need to say that you hate everyone?
I'm just showing my acrimony.
Ah, splendid.
I'm Jim Pickett. I don't feel acrimonious at all.
Okay.
I'm an organic chemist.
Okay, all right.
That's acrimonious enough.
Yeah. I'm Barbara Brabets. Maybe you know me as Abalonia, not acrimonia. And I am a biochemist. I teach biology and chemistry.
Well, let me tell you why there was a little bit of dissension here among the ranks. Earlier this afternoon, I got an email from Ed Stander, and he wanted to talk about the Mpemba effect. And Barbara Bravitz, she's quite adamant that this is something that we shouldn't discuss on the program. So naturally, I feel this is something we should discuss on the program. This is from Wikipedia. The Mpemba effect is a process in which hot water can freeze faster than cold water. The phenomenon is temperature dependent. There is disagreement about the parameters required to produce the effect and about its theoretical basis. And with that brief introduction, we hand it over to Ed Stander, who wanted to talk about this.
Oh, yes. I've been thinking about it for days
and
days.
Well, you did send the email, and so I blame you.
Oh, thanks a lot.
All right.
Well, I was looking up piping because I just bought a hot tub, and I was interested in pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the webpage, and this went on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
According to the webpage, plumbers have found that if there's two pipes in the wall, it's always the hot pipe that breaks first.
Uh-huh.
And so that got into that devolved rapidly into a discussion of the Mpemba effect.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I don't think any of us believe it. But since I brought it up, I'm responsible.
So you explain it a little better than the two lines from Wikipedia that I just read.
Effectively, if you have hot water and cold water, and you put them in a freezer, the hot water, under certain conditions, mind you, only under certain conditions, will freeze before the cold water.
And what are the conditions?
Well, nobody knows. That's the problem.
It's not much of an effect then, is it? Barbara?
I think what's remarkable about this whole thing is what it demonstrates is how hard it is to do a really good controlled experiment about something that looks like it ought to be really simple.
Yeah.
Because if you say, okay, we'll put two cups of water in the freezer and see which freezes first.
Yeah.
But the masses change,
yeah.
Right? So you have that vapor that comes off of hot water, and what effectively is happening is the liquid is going to a gas. Once that's left your pile of hot water, you're not at the same mass as the other one that doesn't have the vapor coming off of it. So you don't have the same masses freezing. So a lot of people talk about hot ice cubes, cold ice cubes, trying to put them in the freezer at the same time, and the hot ice cubes happen faster. But that just could be that the masses of the ice cubes are smaller because a bunch of the vapor has gone off before it froze.
So you would classify yourself as an Mpemba denier.
I am an anti-Mpemba person. Mm-hmm. I think I said that wrong.
Yeah, but there can be other effects. For example, if you fill your container with nice hot water, put it in the freezer, of course that container is going to melt the frost that it's sitting on, and then make excellent thermal contact with the bottom of the freezer.
Interesting.
So that will help it cool down faster.
Yeah.
There are as many ways that you can think of how the hot water could affect these conditions as there are people to think about. Mm.
What I find is particularly interesting in that discussion is that the Wikipedia article on the Mpemba effect has a diagram in which the hot and cold water reach a temperature of about 4 degrees Celsius, and then they suddenly drop. One of them drops before the other. And I can almost guarantee you that graph was made by somebody who has no clue what's going on.
Right.
Because if they're both at 4 Celsius, what's the difference between them?
That's right. And on top of it, 4 Celsius is a very, very particular temperature at which the density of water changes.
Ah.
So the density of water is not the greatest at zero. It's at 4 degrees Celsius.
I'll be darned.
So they knew that, but then they made this diagram. And the diagram makes no sense whatsoever, which just goes to show that Wikipedia may not be the end-all in terms
of knowledge. The internet may be filled with erroneous scientific information.
Well, we've reached a breakthrough on this program already.
We can just shut down the program at this point. We call that
false science.
Mm.
Okay, well, here's the thing. A, I'm sorry I brought it up. B, I'm sorry Ed brought it up. And C, we have had many questions about just this topic.
Yes.
And we'll probably have more today as a result of your...
Well, thank you, Ed. Let's do another email here that came in before the show.
And if we ever run out with any calls, we can always bring back the perennial questions that spark viewer
the best
or listener
interest. Forum.
Yes, like the best why
of the
you can stand forum. An egg on its end
right.
on the solstice.
Our number is 800.
Wait. Why can't you stand an egg on its end?
You can stand an egg on its
one.
End on a solstice, but it will work on all the other days as well, just nobody tries it.
But if it falls in the solstice, it'll fall exactly east-west.
Will it?
I would imagine so.
I think we have to wait till the solstice and check it.
All right. Well, we'll file that one. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum. Ed Stander, Jim Pickett, Barbara Brabitz are here to answer your questions. And one email did come in before the program. And this is from Robert, who writes, "Hello, Science Forum. Here's a two-part question on genetics and evolution. Please, one, do two organisms need the same number of chromosomes to reproduce?"
Yes.
Okay. Two, if so, when an advantageous mutation occurs and gives an offspring a different number of chromosomes than its parents had, how is it able to reproduce and pass on its genes if no one else in its species shares its new number?
It doesn't increase the number of chromosomes. It just increases the number of genes.
Or decreases
so
the number of genes.
Chromosomes are like pairs of underwear in your drawer.
Yeah.
They're individual.
So there's four of them.
Are there four pairs of underwear
clean?
In your drawer?
That's
because
four
it's
genes.
Thursday?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. It is Thursday. And what type of underwear or how fancy it is or whether the string is broken or not, the elastic is broken or not, is really dependent upon the type of underwear, not whether underwear exists or not. So humans have 23 pairs of chromosomes.
Well, I certainly don't have 23 pair of underwear.
Oh, good for you.
Just wanted to mention that.
All right. Okay, TMI. Anyway, so we could increase the number of genes, G-E-N-E-S, just to be clear, or decrease the number of genes or mutate the gene that's there. And some of those mutations are fatal. In other words, offspring of that mutation is not viable.
Okay.
It's only a very, very select few of mutations that actually allow for viable offspring.
Okay.
And I think before we get the calls, you can make hybrids, I think, with different number of chromosomes, but then those hybrids are not...
Are usually sterile.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Is that the reason, just out of question, is that a reason why, for example, mice have 95 or 98% of the same chromosomes as us is because...
It's about 99. It's a little over 99.
Yeah.
There's a lot of homology, the sameness of the genes. Correct.
Well, believe it or not...
It's a mammal, too.
We have a lot of calls here about the Mpemba effect. And I know it's hard to believe, but let's go to line one before our first break and talk about something else.
Thanks, Ray.
Lizzie in Voorheesville. Thank Ed. Lizzie, you're on.
Hi, guys. Barb. Ed, it's been a long time since I've sat in your classroom. How are you? I'm glad to be on the phone.
Great to hear you, Lizzie.
Ed, I didn't sit in your class too much, but it was great to watch the class from the iPad.
Nice.
And I wanted to ask for some advice. Looking for a science demonstration to really wow a group of kids. Maybe something chemistry related that goes boom, or just something that's really awing for young audiences.
Vinegar and baking soda. Bam.
Well, the Mpemba effect.
No.
Watching ice freeze, not. What's the age group, Lizzie?
Elementary.
Okay. So capable of curiosity, but you don't want to send them home damaged. Is that kind of the idea?
Right. And we don't want to send them home to blow up the house.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't
want
to give them too much knowledge.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's
slime.
That's
exactly.
Slime. Yeah, a lot of kids do that. All right, tell us about slime, and then we'll take a break.
Yeah.
So we did... So Ed and I are pretty notorious for our gummy bear demo, Lizzie, which we've tried to do inside. And Ed, do you want to tell everyone what happened at the Science Teachers Conference when we were doing gummy bear demos in a enclosed space?
It's actually pretty cool. The dummy bear experiment makes a cloud that looks very, very similar to a hydrogen bomb explosion.
It does. It's really? A lot of shooting flame out of a test tube. We take a rocket fuel, oxidizer, and we heat it up with a Bunsen burner. And then we take a little gummy bear, which is about anywhere between 12 and 14 calories, depending on the brand.
Yeah.
And we release all that energy at once by throwing it into the oxidizer.
Wow.
And it makes the bear dance.
Oh, cool.
And then he shoots up. And
he shoots flames out of its mouth.
Wow.
Yeah. It's nice purple flame.
So if you had a really caloric one, it would be a big boom?
Oh, we've done that. Brownies.
Yeah.
So brownies like 750 calories.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It's
like a lava fountain of chocolate.
Oh, that's impressive. Yeah. All right, Lizzie, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum. Jim Pickett, Ed Stander, and Barbara Brabitz are here to answer your questions about the Mpemba effect. And we'll be right back.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays Mechanicville, providing commercial casework, custom display solutions, and interactive exhibits for special events, permanent museum installations, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. Hooked Seafood Company Latham, fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, lobster rolls, whole belly clams, fish and chips available, HookedSeafoodInc.com. Myron Wine and Spirits Kingston since 1960. A wine and spirits shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits, and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Vision Excel Eye Care Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames. Where eyewear is an art, visionexceleyecare.com. And from 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine. 20railroad.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop Science Forum and the fun we're having here with Barbara Brabitz, Jim Pickett, and Ed Stander. Ray Graff here, and thank you everybody who pitched in during the fun drive. It is good to be back to regular programming, if you can call this, in fact, regular programming. Before we get to the calls, let's just follow up on the slime.
Oh, yeah. So Lizzie had asked for a safe, non-explosive thing to do with the students that won't really freak the parents out.
Right.
And you can talk about how to make polymers from monomers. So you take simple molecules and you chain them together, kind of like the paper chain that you make for a Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make a linear polymer so that one circle is connected to another circle, or you can make branched ones. Just think of like a fishing net as kind of like a branched polymer.
Yeah.
So you can kind of describe what happens on the molecular level and then have them do it. A simple slime recipe is Elmer's white glue, 50% white glue, 50% water. Get that all nicely mixed together. And then a borax solution.
And what's borax again?
Borax is it's in the laundry detergent aisle.
I've seen it, but what is it?
It's solid. It's sodium borate.
Okay, all right. And it's okay, it's safe?
It's a whitener. Yep, it's safe.
It washes clothes.
It doesn't taste so great, so usually it's not widely consumed
by
youngsters.
Okay, that's good.
And if you dilute the borax and then mix the two, you will make kind of a messy slime.
There's zillions of recipes online.
Can I tell you how much I hate slime?
Sure.
I have a lot of little kids. And I've been dealing with slime for a long time at the house. And just recently, my youngest daughter brought home a tub of slime. What do you do with it? I said, let's throw it out. No, I can't throw it out. No, it just sits around. Why? Why slime Barbara Bravitz?
You could throw some vinegar in it when she's not looking and destroy her slime.
Oh, I like that idea. Oh, that's a great idea.
And then you can have the slime will disintegrate. It'll go back to liquid phase.
Slime
you'll be like,
we
have to put it down.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. I'm doing that when I get home. Yeah. All right, one more question.
All those kids are going to suffer now. Thanks a lot,
One
Barbara.
Question for you,
Knowledge
Ed.
Knowledge is power.
Another. You talked about the gummy bears that exploded like hydrogen bombs, and I just got thinking about the thing I saw on TV, and I've seen it now on YouTube, where you take the Mentos and you put them in the Diet Coke.
Yeah,
what happens
awesome.
There? What's going on?
You're effectively taking the Diet Coke, which contains a lot of dissolved carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And as that Mentos dissolves, every little piece of it becomes a nucleus for a bubble. And so what you do effectively is you release all the carbon dioxide at once.
Oh, neat.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch.
Now ask why it needs to be Diet Coke.
Okay, why does it need to be Diet Coke?
It doesn't, but it's less sticky to clean up.
Do they have to be Mentos?
Yes.
No, it doesn't. You could use sweet tarts.
Okay.
You can use Smarties. Anything that's very porous that
like
doesn't
sugar
dissolve
cube?
Super fast.
No,
a sugar cube probably won't work that well.
It has to be a little denser than that.
It needs to have. It actually has to have little tiny spaces inside the shape of the candy.
Yeah.
So like a Jolly Rancher wouldn't work.
Oh, that is terrific. Well, now I know.
Now, if you fill the container with slime.
Any soda will work.
You know, let's go to the phones now. You know, we're going to talk about some exciting stuff here on the program. 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Len in Greenfield. Len, you're on.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Good.
All right. So my question about the Impemba effect, couldn't it be explained from a thermodynamic perspective? I mean, wouldn't it like necessarily be the heat transfer coefficients of the hot water versus the cold water?
Well, the trick is
why one would freeze.
The trick is you can't explain it by thermodynamic effects. That is the major problem with the Impemba effect. It's probably something outside of the water that's causing it to happen, either the environment or, as Jim said, the fact that there's a better heat transfer at the bottom of a container. But as far as actually happening, there's no reason why hot water should freeze faster than cold water.
Yeah, and you could explain it most any way that you wanted, depending on how it is the experimental conditions are set up. I mean, what it is that's actually causing the effect, because it looks like there's many, many things that could be affecting.
Interesting.
Well, let me give you a very simple example. According to the plumbers, hot water pipes freeze faster than cold water pipes. Well, that could very simply be because you're using hard water and the cold water pipes have more calcium deposit on them, and as a result, there's less heat transfer into the material.
Interesting.
So there are all sorts of reasons why it could happen, but people seem to think that it's a characteristic of the water itself, and that doesn't make sense.
Right. And the first thing I thought of was the hot water pipe is accessed less often than the cold water pipe. Like if you have to wash your hands or whatever, you're going to turn the cold water on. So the water is still in the pipe.
It's not moving.
And that's what actually causes the freeze up, is the fact that the water isn't moving and it's able to crystallize.
You want to follow up, Len?
No, actually, you know, water is a really like mysterious substance, you know, but because, you know, so supposedly we can't explain a lot of its behavior. But so I have another question, though, real quick about the slime. What kind of polymer are you making with the slime? What is the actual, like, polymeric solution that you're making?
The Elmer's...
With regards to the sodium borate and the Elmer's glue. I know Elmer's glue itself is a cross-linked polymer, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the Elmer's glue in the bottle is a linear polymer. And it's something called... It's mostly polyvinyl alcohol. So it's a long carbon chain in which there's an oxygen and hydrogen group sticking off every other carbon. There's a little bit of acetate on there too. But now, and the borax basically makes links between those oxygens of adjacent chains.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I like to describe it is that the chains of glue are like spaghetti strands,
mm-hmm.
cooked spaghetti.
Yeah.
And So when the spaghetti's fresh out of the pot, you know, it pours nicely.
Yeah.
But when it gets cold, it's stuck together at various points and becomes this rubbery mass.
Yes, it does.
What the borax does is it basically is those contact points that's holding it together.
All right.
The chemistry that's, to get on my soapbox a little bit,
yeah.
The chemistry that's often shown in articles online and stuff is actually incorrect.
Ah.
It's showing actual bonds between the oxygens and the boron of the borax.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Okay.
It's something just called it's hydrogen bonding.
Yeah.
Very, very weak bonds. Mm. But it's enough to kind of hold this all together as a
and make
as
it
a
really
gel.
Annoying. Really annoying.
Yeah. So what does that's the... good. We're going to send some more to your kids, right?
So what does the vinegar do when you put it inside?
It disrupts those hydrogen bonds by inserting something else that can hydrogen bond with those oxygens, pushes the borate out. So it's kind of like molecular musical chairs. And if you overwhelm the musical chairs with the vinegar, then the borate's kind of left standing in the corner.
Yeah, basically you're converting the sodium borate to boric acid.
Mm.
And that's not as sticky as it were to the...
Well, that's my homework for the program.
Yeah, pick up a jug of vinegar on the
hell
way.
Hell yeah, buddy. Let's go to Delia in Poughkeepsie. Delia, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
You know, I remember in the fourth grade, my teacher told me that the reason why hot water froze faster than cold was because the molecules were closer together. And I'm wondering if there's any truth to that.
No.
No, they're actually
further apart.
Further apart.
And they're wiggling, and they wiggle more. That's what temperature is. It's actually the average wiggliness of molecules, which is somewhat mass dependent. So you can have two things, like a heavy molecule and a light molecule. They won't wiggle at the same frequency. But if you take their mass into account, their wiggliness is predictable at any particular energy.
We call that wiggleosity, by the way.
Wiggleosity. Is that really the term?
I think we should trademark that.
Okay. All right.
Measured with a wiggleometer.
Delia, you want to follow up on this?
Well, no. Thank you very much. I mean, it just clarifies that there's really no answer so far hot freezes before cold.
Well, let me tell you, my teacher back in elementary school told me that the number of grains of sand on a beach was infinite, and I have never forgiven her for that.
Yeah.
So I certainly understand
all right,
how you see this.
Thank you. It's a bitter program.
I appreciate their attempt at answering the question, though, because, you know, children's questions about science are so fundamental.
Right.
It's really difficult to answer that. I mean, that's the chore of this show sometimes. We used to get the calls from the kids, and the kid questions are hard, like, why does a volcano explode
right
when it explodes?
So one of the rules for teachers should be to answer promptly and inaccurately.
Or give them a nugget of correct information and then say, I'll come back to you later
And don't try to find the answer in Wikipedia.
Let's go.
Call the science forum.
Let's go to Bill in Cooperstown. Hello, Bill in Cooperstown.
Hello. As somebody with a chemistry degree a long time ago, I have experienced a hot water pipe freezing in the wall when a cold water pipe does not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing is there's maybe a difference between freezing faster and freezing before, that it's not time, but temperature sensitive. And when somebody mentioned the difference between hard water, I think calcium will precipitate out of hot water so that there may be fewer dissolved solids in hot water and it allows it to freeze sooner. I haven't done any calculations, but that's always been my assumption.
Well, different minerals, so if you think about things dissolving in water, whether it's hot or cold, you think of like salt or sugar, and that when you have it hotter, you could get more stuff in. And then as it cools down, you'd have it precipitate out, right? But certain minerals don't behave that way. Yeah,
hard water is calcium, not sugar and salt.
Right, and calcium and magnesium salts, which are the most common hardness salts in our area anyway, don't have the effect where more is in hot water. It's less. You're right.
And consider this, that the hot water is coming usually out of a hot water tank. And the hot water tank is usually filled with calcium, magnesium, which is put down. So the water is probably relatively well saturated in both of those minerals when it's coming out through the pipes.
Yeah. But in any case,
the hot water would have proportionately less.
Yeah. But
because it is hot.
In any case, the concentration is really low.
Yeah, parts per million.
So that the difference in the specific. In the freezing point is going to be tenths of a degree or less.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Bill, hey, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum on WAMC. Barbara Brabitz is here, Jim Pickett, and Ed Stander. And let's go to line number six. I wonder what this one's about. Al in Hudson. Al, you're on.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hi.
I've been listening to the Mpimba effect, and I think everybody's pretty close, and I may be close too. I don't know what's actually right or wrong. But aren't we changing the chemical nature of the water just by eating it?
Not chemical change. No, there's no chemical change. It's a physical change.
We don't have out chlorine and fluorine and all that other stuff?
No.
Well, you mean
like as it was dissolved in the water?
Yeah, you're going to drive out especially dissolved gases.
Yeah, chlorine gas, but there's not a lot of chlorine gas in your water usually.
No, and it's in there as a salt anyway. So you'll remove the gases. Some things may precipitate out, but by and large the structure of the water remains the same.
Right. Well, when we say hot water freezes before cold water,
sometimes,
you know, like somebody mentioned, if we're talking a quarter of a degree or a half a degree sitting in the wall overnight, that just may be the phenomenon of time.
But
another half hour, maybe the cold water would have froze too.
So let's just do a little thought exercise because I don't have the answer. But this is where I get stuck. You've got hot water that's cooling down faster. Eventually, it's going to be the same temperature. It'll catch up to the cold water pipe next to it. They'll be the same temperature. Now who wins the race? There's nothing to win at that point because now they're both the same. So,
but they're not the same water.
Well, pretty close.
You've heated it up and changed it.
Well, everything that you've said is true, but I think that it's a matter that the effect is going to be extremely small, that there will be other effects that overwhelm the dissolved stuff in the water. For example, with the hot water pipes.
Yeah.
Isn't it true that you actually have more mineral buildup in a hot water pipe than a cold water pipe?
That's what I've seen.
So what you end up with then is less water.
Okay.
Right, and more blanket. Oh. To a certain extent, if you think of the mineralization, it itself could be an insulator.
Well, but actually, it's going to be a pretty good thermal conductor, being crystalline. Oh. So, but you simply have less water to freeze if it's
interesting. That
there's
from a diameter perspective.
If there's mineralization in the pipe,
here's another thing to consider, especially about pipes, since we're into pipes, is that when a pipe freezes or when a pipe breaks, it's usually because the water inside actually bursts it, not the ice.
Right.
As the ice forms, it puts the water under more and more pressure,
right,
so the water breaks. So it doesn't necessarily have to have a solid piece of ice. It could be little pieces of ice in there that are forming, like crystals. And it's very possible that the hot water pipe may have more, for example, particles in there, which allow the crystallization to occur first.
Interesting.
And also there needs to be some kind of pressure against the water. Like there's no way for it to back up in the pipe as it expands.
Right. And so basically, again, the problem is that it's an experiment without controls.
Uh-huh.
And unless you know what the controls are, you can't make a statement.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. And Douglas in Hurley is next. Hi, Douglas.
Hello. I'll give you a little background. My father cut ice for a living.
Yeah.
And he was a refrigeration man. I became a refrigeration man and have a degree in engineering. And I was a union plumber.
Okay.
So ice, the old wives' tale of it freezing faster came from the old refrigerators. If you remember, like Calvinators and the old Frigidaires.
Right.
The Freon inside the boxes actually went through the metal in the pans of the refrigerators.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what happened was people would put a tray of warm ice in there and one of you just hit on it. that tray of ice would go through the frost buildup because none of them were frost-free.
Correct.
They had to be defrosted on a regular basis. New refrigerators blow air. It's a totally different setup.
Interesting. But
what happened in the olden days was they would put a warm tray of ice cubes in there. It would go down, and the thermal conductivity of the metal on metal of the trays, because they didn't even have plastic trays, because they insulate a little bit, that metal on metal would freeze the hot water faster than cold, only because of the metal contact it made.
Does this make sense to you guys?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, I think we have...
I learned that in engineering school, and I learned it from my father, and I've seen it. The other thing is, I owned a company, and major commercial company doing refrigeration. I'm retired now, so I did it for over 40 years, and he did it for over 40 years.
Yeah.
The water freezing, the hot water in the pipes and the walls freezing, I repaired tons of them. They always had something different. In other words, that hot water line might have been closer to the wall that was cold. The water inside is all the same. I don't care if it's heated, how much molecules of, you know, dissolved calcium are in it. It isn't going to change. It's not significant enough to matter.
All right.
All the frozen lines that I've ever fixed had some reason they froze. A cold draft coming in on them. You know, they're not insulated in the right spot.
Okay.
The wall wasn't insulated in the right spot.
Excellent. Well, I think we could lay this baby to rest.
Douglas, I think that everybody on the panel is actually nodding in agreement, so we'll have to take a break there. It's a high note. It's the apex of the program thus far. Douglas
Thank
and Hurley.
Thank you, Douglas.
800-348-2551. Not that there was anything wrong with the earlier questions. It's just that Douglas, he hit a certain plateau, and it's downhill from here. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Round Lake Auditorium announcing their summer season of music, art, and theater performances located in the historic village of Round Lake. RoundLakeAuditorium.org. Barrington Stage Company, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Presenting Mark St. Germain's Typhoid Mary, a play about the woman behind the myth on the St. Germain stage. Through June 16th, BarringtonStageCo.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. Practicing aesthetic plastic surgery, working to help people improve their appearance and well-being. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for more information. And from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear, Albany.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, the Science Forum. Ray Graff here. Numbers 800-348-2551. We have the panel, the A-list. Ed Standard, Jim Pickett, Barbara Brabitz are here. And before we get back to the calls, Jim, you wanted to talk about something very interesting indeed.
Well, it was just something that was striking. I was the other day reading my science journal, as one does, and there was a graphic that kind of got my attention. And it has to do with the weight of living things on the Earth.
Yeah.
And altogether, in terms of just carbon, according to this graphic, there's a little over 500 gigatons of living things on the Earth. And most of that, almost all of that, in fact, are plants and bacteria and fungi.
Yeah.
Less than 0.5% are animals, including insects and stuff. So most of those animals... the weight is have to do with insects and stuff. But the interesting thing in the graphic was that the weight of humans is almost 10 times that of all the rest of the wild mammals combined.
Yeah.
Was that like right after Christmas and Thanksgiving?
It could be. And in discussing this with Barbara, I had thought that the chipmunks in my backyard would have skewed that considerably.
Right. Sure.
But... I mean, 10 times more human mass.
Okay.
And there's double that in our livestock.
Oh.
Amazing.
There's two cows for every person.
Okay, yeah. So, but still, at the end of the day, it's 0.5% of the mass of living things, you said?
Well, yes, that's including the plants. But in terms of the animals, we rule.
So,
although, actually, it says that the mass of humans is about the same as the mass of termites.
Well, there so you go.
Good to know where we rate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But M. Night Shyamalan did a movie where the plants turned against humans.
Oh, yeah.
And started putting out these toxins, cytotoxins, to try to eliminate us. And the moral of the story at the end of it was that, you know, we'd done so much to damage them that they were finally fighting
upset.
Back.
Yes.
So
sentient
imagine
plants.
If we're 0.5% or 3% of 1.5%, we're losing that battle.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the Day of the Triffids was another good one about plants that were very upset.
Or the blob.
The blob. That's more like a slime thing. That goes back
right.
to earlier in the program.
Was it an animal? Was it plant? Not really sure.
Yes, it's
mushroom.
The science
mushroom.
Form.
Mushroom?
WAMC.
Okay.
Let's,
slime mold.
Right. Well, let's go
that's
back to the phones.
That's prokaryotic. Or eukaryotic.
Eukaryotic.
800-348-2551 is the number. And Jill in Waterford. Jill.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm at work. So I haven't been able to listen nonstop. I have to keep putting the phone down and picking it up, etc. So if you went over this already, I apologize. But it has to do with the hot water, cold water question you had.
Yeah.
And when I was in the seventh grade, that was an experiment that our teacher gave us. And we came home, we did it. And came back and said, the hot water froze faster. She said that the reason that happens is because the molecules are moving much faster in the hot water than in the cold water. And as such, they are going to slow down faster than the cold water.
Huh.
Because the other thing we noticed was that the ice cubes were cloudy in the hot water, as opposed to being a lot more crystal clear in the cold water.
Oh, that's reversed, I think.
Right.
Usually the hot water is clearer.
I'm sorry?
You may have had the wrong ice cubes, because when you use hot water...
Just plain old water.
Yeah, no, when
water
you,
and
when
an
you,
ice break.
When you boil hot water, what you're doing effectively is you're de-aerating it. So when you put that in an ice cube tray and freeze it, there's less air in the water in the first place. And so the water comes out much clearer than it would be in the cold water.
Okay.
And
okay.
it's the gas that's being captured that makes that water cloudy.
Okay.
Right.
So when you see an ice cube that's cloudy, it's really two components. It's those minerals that we talked about earlier, and it's also the captured gas.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jill, thanks a lot for calling in from work. We appreciate it. It's the Science Forum on WAMC. What about heavy water? Does that freeze faster?
That's an experiment I can't do as homework.
That actually has a little bit lower freezing point.
Yep. Yeah.
So that would freeze. It would take longer to freeze because you'd have to cool down a little bit more.
And the mass is different, too. So a normal hydrogen, there's two hydrogens in a water molecule and one oxygen. The hydrogen is double the mass in heavy water, or triple the mass if you have radioactive heavy water.
And the real question would be not so much the matter of the freezing point now that I think about it. It's the heat of fusion. And that I don't know for D2O.
Yeah, they are.
All right. Let's go to the phones and let's switch it up a little bit here. Aaron in Pelham, Massachusetts. Aaron, you're on.
Hi. Enjoying the program very much. I want to talk about the penumbra effect. Oh, just kidding. No. I'd like to hear a little bit about El Volcán del Fuego in Guatemala. I wonder if you could speak briefly about what's going on there and maybe the history, or if you have any awareness of it.
Basically, it's a series. All those islands down there are volcanic. They're all riding on the upper level of a subduction zone.
Yeah, I think he's talking about the one in Guatemala.
Yeah, in Guatemala, yes, was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually sitting on top of a subduction zone.
A subduction zone, for those who don't know, is?
Is where the crust of the Earth, the oceanic crust of the Earth, is going beneath the continental crust.
Mm-hmm.
And as it goes down, it melts, and as it melts, it comes up to the surface.
Yeah.
So as the stuff collects, and accumulates, that's what happens. So there are locations on the crust of the Earth where there are, it's easier for the stuff to come out.
Yeah.
And so it collects there, and then it pops out through the volcano. So it really all depends on what's going on and how fast the oceanic crust is subducting.
Aaron, you want to follow up?
No, a little bit lost, but I'll look into that.
All right, man.
I think one of the issues that happened with why the Guatemalan one was so catastrophic compared to the Hawaiian one is the rate at which the lava is coming out. And I think what happened with the Guatemalan one is it built up a certain amount of pressure and then it kind of blew. So kind of like overfilling a water balloon versus just a leaking water balloon is Hawaii. It's got it's filling, but then it's emptying at the same time.
Yeah.
And this one filled, and then finally something gave
there's,
way.
There's a big difference between the types of lava that form on the ocean and type that form on land, and that's the amount of quartz that they have. And if you take quartz and add a little bit of add a little sodium to it, you wind up with glass. And you know that glass is a very, very sticky material. And so if the lava is coming through the continental crust, which contains a lot of quartz, it actually blocks it up. It, the volcano, to some extent, not only becomes constipated, but it forms gas bubbles. And so when it finally breaks free, it breaks much more explosively than it would, for example, in Hawaii.
So the volcanoes in Hawaii and Iceland and the other hot spots, there the lava is coming kind of straight from the
straight from the mantle.
So it's runnier and you get these nice fountains.
Right.
Whereas coming from like around the Ring of Fire where the Guatemalan is, as Ed said, it's sticky and thereby kind of more explosive.
And I think the deaths were mostly in Guatemala, the deaths have been from pyroclastic flow.
Right.
Which is an ash slash mud slash snow mixture.
Yeah, you saw some of the horrific pictures, and it just reminded me of Pompeii.
That's what I thought, too, is like these people were just doing their daily business, and all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh.
That's the end of that.
Yeah, no running away from that, like in those movies.
Is this a situation where they weren't watching it as closely, or they couldn't have possibly foreseen this?
Well, usually before something like this happens, the land starts to rise up. And we have satellites up there that can actually measure those changes. For example, in Yellowstone, they're watching the mountains rise up every slowly.
That should be a fairly impressive one.
It will be if it ever goes.
Yeah.
In fact, the last time it went, it covered the entire Midwest with about 3 meters of ash.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't. That's the breadbasket.
So it all depends.
All right. Anybody else?
Just that I wouldn't want to be there right now.
Right,
it's not over.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. I don't think I've given the Fun Drive phone number once. Maybe I have. Let's go to Mark in Skodak. Mark, you're on.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Sure.
Good. I got a question. Back in 1974, taking chemistry at West Virginia University, I was forced to use Avogadro's number as a constant. We had no calculators at the time, and it drove me crazy. I'm just wondering, where did Avogadro come up with that number? And if it's a constant, can you use anything else as a constant also?
Yeah, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd, just in case you needed a flashback to the 70s.
And we'll play some Steppenwolf, too, if
that's
you like.
That's right. Although no one who lived through the 70s should be forced to remember the 70s.
Yeah, but they do have a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah, Avogadro found a really interesting phenomenon, or shall I say, kind of created a way to gather numbers together. So Avogadro's number, we call it the really large dozen, because a dozen what, right? A dozen donuts, a dozen parking tickets. I mean, there's difference between the two, but it still represents the same number. And that's the same, that's similar thing with Avogadro and his number. And it comes up in a bunch of different formula. Gases, for example, that's really where he did a lot of work, where he took a certain number of molecules and he would put it into a balloon and he would see how big the balloon was at a certain temperature, and it was always the same size, regardless of weight. So regardless of mass, if he figured out how many individual molecules were in that balloon, the balloon would always be the same size.
Huh. Very interesting.
And the reason we have to deal with it is because the chemistry takes place atom by atom. It's the number of atoms that are combining. But a chemist, somebody in the lab, you weigh things out by grams.
Right.
Avogadro's number is the link between the grams and the number of atoms.
Ah.
so you can get your recipes right.
Right.
Okay.
So when I go to the deli and I order my turkey, I don't say I want 14 slices of turkey, although I could.
Yeah.
I say I want half a pound of turkey. And so the person behind the deli has to assume I know what size I want and then slice me however many slices it ends up being. And so we deal with mass a lot because it's easy to weigh, easy to deal with. But it really comes down to the individual slices, the atoms and the molecules.
Do you ever order your deli meats with Avogadro's number?
I don't have that big of a paycheck.
I'd like 6.023 times 10 to the 23rd slices of
just imagine the blank look you'd get. Yeah. Mark, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum. Mike in, where are you calling from, Mike?
Tribes Hill.
Oh, Tribes Hill. It says Trid Hill here. I'd never heard of the place.
Montgomery County.
You're on, man. Go.
Well, just a different perspective of this hot and cold water thing that you haven't talked about. What would the different... These pipes are under pressure when these things take place.
Right.
What would pressure do with it? And the hot water might even be slightly higher pressure than the left is, than the cold.
The pressure is not enough to have a measurable effect.
Well, it's worse than that. If the pipe is about to freeze, the water in the pipe should be at freezing. It can't be hot anymore.
Right.
Right.
So there can't be a difference.
Okay. Mike, thank you for the call. And over to DeWitt in Kingston. You're on.
Yes, I'd just like to respond to the hot, cold water conversation you guys are having.
Yeah.
I'd like to return back to the textbook definition of a BTU.
Right.
Which is the amount of heat required to change 1 pound of water 1 degree Fahrenheit at sea level. So if you had 1 pound of water or 2 1-pound containers of water existing in a freezer at the same temperature, 1 pound of water at 100 degrees would require 68 BTUs to drop it to 32 degrees. 1 pound of water at 40 degrees would only require 8 BTUs.
Right.
So if the two 1 pound water containers existed in the same freezer, there is no way that the hot water could freeze faster than the cold because of the amount of heat you'd have to pull out of the water.
Yeah, and that's why the arguments all come around to the rate at which the heat is being moved in and out of the container. So you're absolutely right. It's going to require more heat to take it down to the freezing point. The second part of all this, though, is to convert water at 32 degrees Fahrenheit into ice at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, you have to remove much more heat than it took to cool it down to there, to remove the energy from the water to form ice crystals.
It's 4 kilojoules, which is a lot.
Yeah.
4 kilojoules for about 18 grams of water, which is not a lot of water.
Yeah. So the thermal conductivity or things like the circulation in the water makes a huge difference in the rate at which you can get that heat out and actually make the ice.
All right, we have time for maybe another call here. Hey, David in Greenfield, you have about 45 seconds here, buddy. Go ahead.
All right, so my son last winter was cleaning some apparatus that had nozzles in it, and so he was using hot and cold water outside and going, look at this. Because the hot water was making what looked like snow, and the cold water wasn't. And he's going, this is proof that the hot water freezes faster. And I'm going, no.
Yeah.
It's just proof that the hot water has more vapor pressure, and so you're getting the snow because it's going out and condensing faster. And we did this long series of experiments in our freezer, and in no circumstance did the hot water freeze faster than the cold. They freeze at close to the same speed, basically because when they're at 32 degrees and freezing, that's where most of the heat is moving.
Correct.
Yep.
Right. I kind of summarized.
So in every case, we would get kind of partial freezing, but the cold was a little bit more frozen than the hot. But under certain circumstances, you can get snow out of hot water.
All right.
And it's not out of cold water. Hey. And people go, oh, look, it's freezing faster.
All right, David, thank you. You know, Ed, this was the best idea you've had.
This was the best show we've ever had.
Talking about the Mpemba effect with our buddy Ed Stander and Barbara Brabets and Jim Pickett. This is one for the books, kids. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, Therma-Tru Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more. 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, chimes, binoculars, and many Father's Day gifts for Dad. WildBirdJunction.com. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, specialty sports eyewear, sunglasses, and eye exams since 1953. Sheehy Opticians.com. And the Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, announcing Summer Theater Camp, a theatrical learning experience for grades 4 through 12, taught by Broadway and industry professionals, newpaltz.edu/theater. Thanks again to Jim, Ed, and Barbara for being here today. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. And once again, thank you for being with us during the fun drive and chipping in. Really appreciate it. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. We welcome back our buddy Rocco DeFazio. He explores the unique world of vegan Italian cooking. Right now, stand by for news.